Jason,
I hate doing your show.
Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year.
We are thrilled to have you.
Great to be with you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Whatever. You're weird. You're weird. Get off my back, Molly.
Get a Big Mac, Jason.
Okay. Molly said it best. I said fart in the bathtub. She said gross.
I love Matt Hamilton.
You are 1,000,000% right, Jim. That should be a drop, too.
Thank you.
Dynamite drop in, Rye Guy.
Thank you.
Jason Wilde is on Jim, Matt, and Molly.
What's up with that?
That is the theme music for the Jason Wilde. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Molly Brown. This is Jim, Matt, Molly, no Matt Hamilton. He's allegedly supposed to join the show at some point for
do
a segment.
Do we take bets if he is?
If we do not follow up with another text, he will not join the show.
Okay.
Jason, you can join in on that too. We got Dimps behind the glass. Jason, did you know that Owen's nickname is Dimps? And that's what we call him. In, you know, when prime time's out, we got Dimps as our producer.
Owen did a great job getting me ready. I guess my question is, how does he feel about that nickname?
Owen, would you like to
You're
speak?
You're spoken to, Owen, so you can speak.
Yeah, I don't mind it because it goes back to when I was in high school. My coaches gave me that nickname, so it's something that has stuck with me for a long time, so I like it.
Jason, what do you think of when you hear the name Dimps? Like, what's the first image that comes to your mind?
A chimpanzee. A chimp.
Dimps
okay,
the chimp?
Did you hear us? D-I-M-P-S? Dimps?
No, I heard.
Okay.
Molly's thinking of butt cheeks.
You asked me what I thought of. That was what I thought of. I thought of like this cute little chimpanzee back behind the glass pushing all the buttons.
Okay, that's a lot nicer than
Sorry.
I mean, that's more advanced than what Jesse can do. I'll tell you that.
That's
I can understand that that's where you went to. Well, they say a job's so easy a monkey can do it. Well, Jesse's doing it, so I guess so.
You're terrible.
I didn't even think to go that direction, but I'm so glad that I did now. It was just my first reaction. Also, I would think of dimples, like dimples in your cheeks.
Molly's thinking of the butt cheeks, not face cheeks, but dimples. That's why she was asking. She wanted to know if she was alone thinking about butt dimples.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I don't think I've probably had those for a very long time, so that never crossed my mind.
Jason, setting aside butt dimples.
What is that? Is that like your Disney villain laugh? What was that?
That's a different one. Hopefully Dimps doesn't know where the hockey is. We don't need to play it. It's fine.
She's got like a witch laugh there, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Oh my gosh. Find that button,
there it is.
Dimps.
There it is. Did you hear it? Play it again.
Really?
Wait, that's Molly?
Yes.
Yeah, I have that as my that as my text message notifications now.
I don't know why.
It startles the bejesus out of me when I'm driving like in the car and I forget that it's there and all of a sudden I hear, ha-ha!
That's fantastic. Yeah. This has been the best segment I've ever done on this show and I've really done very little.
Well, thanks for the backhanded compliment. We appreciate it. Matthew Golden, I want to get to him because this is kind of like a chicken and the egg question, and I'm guessing the answer is all of the above, but obviously the two wide receivers taking the first round are outperforming him. You can look down on Chicago, Luther Burden, who was in a similar situation. He had plenty of receivers in front of him, is having a better rookie season than Matthew Golden. And by no means am I writing him off, but I'm curious, what is your vibe from talking to the team or just watching the game and your experience here? Like, what is not clicking with Golden? Is it he's not the early option? Is it Love isn't seeing him quick enough? Is Golden not doing the right things? Like, what is it this year? Because I do think he'll be a good player that is holding him back from having this breakout game I think everyone is expecting. But at this point, it's almost like a punchline. Matthew Golden's going to score a touchdown.
Yeah, I think it is most of the above. I don't think it's Jordan Love not seeing him. So but everything else is true, including the institutional rookies, even when they get a lot of opportunities, aren't super productive, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, quite frankly, what they were able to get from Jaden Reed his rookie year. I mean, people forget Jaden Reed led these guys in receiving yards and receptions each of his first 2 years in the league. That's not exactly easy to do, right? Mm-hmm. So he deserves a bunch of credit for that. On top of that, like, most guys that are rookies don't have that opportunity, and Matthew Golden's just the latest in a long line of Packers wide receivers that if he develops into what they think, and frankly, I think he's capable of becoming, he's going to be a really good player. But, you know, whether it's Greg Jennings, whether it's Jordy Nelson, whether it's Randall Cobb, whether it's Devontae Adams, you know, none of those guys had super productive years. In fact, the guy who had the most catches as a rookie before Jaden Reed broke it was James Jones in 2007. Now, I know that's different head coaches, LaFleur versus McCarthy, but I think that's part and parcel with being a rookie here. I also think, you know, unlike the Bears, who clearly had a one and a two, right? I don't know. You know their depth chart better than I do, but I would say that DJ Moore and Rome Odunze are clearly one and two, right?
Correct. At correct.
Least yep. Start the season.
Yep.
Like the Packers, they still they're all about this kind of mumbo jumbo group of wide receivers that you just never know who's going to be the guy. I mean, heck, there were a couple games this year where Golden wasn't a guy earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the biggest thing, you know, those two guys that we're talking about, Teteroa McMillan with the Panthers, and Emeka Abuka with the Buccaneers, because of the injuries to Godwin and to who's their veteran guy, Mike Evans. Like, they both walked in and they were basically number one receivers, and that obviously wasn't the case here. On top of that, I thought Jordan Love said something. Yeah, Jordan Nelson. I always call Jordy Jordan. I'm more formal with him. I thought one of the most telling things I heard was, and kind of like the compliment of me saying I love being on your show and I hate being on your show, is that, like, Love said a couple weeks ago before the concussion, you know, Golden had a couple of really big plays and I had written about him. And when I was talking to Jordan about him, he said, the thing that's really happened is that he's gotten so much better with his route running. It's so much more precise, which is a great compliment, right?
Yep.
But what's the corollary to that? It wasn't that precise,
right, yes.
And it wasn't that great earlier this year, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I do think that factors in. Like, if you know, whether you're the quarterback or whether you're the play caller deciding who's in on what plays and whether or not a guy's the first, second, or third read in the progression, if the guy's not running great routes with the kind of precision that the NFL requires, I mean, look, we can, again, college football's got all kinds of problems. But they have become, in terms of a breeding ground for wide receivers, a much better preparatory system than they used to be, right? It was almost impossible. Remember when, like, Marcus Colston for the Saints came in and had 1,000 yards? And he was, like, this incredible anomaly, not only as a seventh-round pick, but as a rookie. Now, all these guys, a lot of guys hit the ground running more than ever before. But I also would argue that you don't have to be as precise as a route runner in college football. And obviously the quarterbacks aren't as accurate either. So I just think Matthew Golden is a talented guy that we need to wait and see, you know, year two, year three, et cetera. I still maintain he is a faster Greg Jennings. That doesn't mean he's going to have the kind of career Greg Jennings had, who, if he had just stayed here, that dude would have been the all-time leading receiver in Packers history and might have been a Pro Football Hall of Famer. But again, things happen. I think that's how good Matthew Golden could be. He could be like Greg Jennings was during his time in Green Bay, but certainly his first year, he has not been ultra-productive.
Jason, do you foresee there being any drama this offseason about Matt LaFleur's future as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers?
I'll be honest with you, Molly, and don't take this the wrong way, but stop asking me that question.
I don't think I've asked you the question.
No, everyone has, though. And here's the problem. Is he a flawless coach? No, definitely not. Is there plenty of room for criticism? Absolutely. But I don't understand this portion of the fan base that is hot to fire him. I just don't get it. I don't.
Right.
At the same time, I also can't speak intelligently to whether or not the new team president at Policy has any interest in firing him. Like, I just don't, I don't know if I'm him. Like, I don't know what that guy wants.
Right.
Right. And nobody does. Like, we don't know him, and he certainly doesn't open his mouth as frequently as his predecessor did. So we always knew what that guy was thinking, because he was always going to pop off, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can't even go to the WIAA State Girls Basketball Tournament without saying something. So, you know, Ed Policy, I don't know him. And whenever anybody asks me what he might do, you know, the one thing I can say, his dad fired Bill Walsh.
Yep.
Right? And the idea of firing arguably, and I would say better than Belichick, even though he didn't win quite as many Super Bowls, arguably the greatest coach in the post-Lombardi era, to fire him, that takes some guts now. And I do find myself wondering if, you know, that means that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree and there's going to be that same willingness to fire a guy who's much less accomplished, thinking he's not the guy.
Well, so
again, I
did intentionally ask you for potential drama, not necessarily are they going to fire him, because I am
no,
of the belief
but
that
I
they
think
should.
That's part of the drama.
Yeah, it is 100%. But Jim has also talked about on our show, like, and I think we're going to dive more into it later. But like, is what if the Packers do say, okay, we'll bring you back for, I don't know, 1 year, $10 million, or even 2 years, $10 million per year? That is that considered a slap in the face that Matt LaFleur should maybe be like, eh, you know what? No, I'm going to go somewhere else where they're going to pay me more, because we were looking that the NFC, the other NFC North coaches, Ben Johnson and Kevin O'Connell, both getting paid $13 million per year.
Dan Campbell, 15.
Dan Campbell, $15 million per year. And what we found for Matt LaFleur was about $5 million per year. That's a lot less, and he should not be the lowest paid coach in the NFC North.
Yeah, I don't think that $5 million is accurate. This is one of the drawbacks of coach salaries, is that they're not subject to the to the database that, like, the truth of the matter is Domofsky and all those ESPN guys have access to a database that they get all the player contracts. They don't even need. When I started this job, I had a couple of agents that were willing to help me out and tell me the terms of contracts. That's how you found out, because media had no access. Now you've got Spotrac, you've got the other one. That's the problem with the coaching one. And my God, the Packers, they didn't even announce the last extension that him and Goody got, right?
True.
Like, they never even said anything. So I think he gets paid more than that. I think he probably is still the lowest paid coach in the division, though, to your point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the question I have for him is, and I haven't asked him this on or off the record, but, like, if they come to you with a 2-year extension and say, look, we still think you're a really good coach, but we need, you know, things have not, we haven't made the progress we'd like. Does he take that, or does he say, you know what, no, I'm going to bet on myself, I'm going to play out this season, and then I feel pretty confident that I'm going to be a popular potential hire as a free agent next year? I don't know. I honestly don't. You know, his boys are happy here. I think his wife is happy here. So all those things factor in. I would just say this, and this is what I've been telling people. Like, if I'm Matt LaFleur, I am taking whatever extension they offer, because I'm going to make them fire me for me not to work here anymore. Because then, unlike player contracts, those are guaranteed. So if I sign a 2-year, let's say $24 million. So let's say it's $12 million. So he'd still be the lowest paid, but he's guaranteed $24 million over the next 2 years. I'm taking that, and then I'm forcing them to fire me if they don't want me anymore. Because then I get all that money, and, yeah, there'll be some offset language for his next job, but he gets to be choosy then, right? So I would not, if I was him, bet on myself just because you can get guaranteed money. So, you spend all this time with Rutledge. I would tell Packers fans, listen to Jim, because every time you hire a coach, there's all this pomp and circumstance and everybody's excited about him. But then what percentage of teams end up having hired the right guy?
Right.
Like, there's more teams that get it wrong than get it right. And just because they're the Packers doesn't mean they're going to get it right.
Yes. I mean, you can look at now the floor is, I guess, quite, I don't know how you compare him to Lovie Smith. Lovie got to a Super Bowl. He didn't win one. The Bears fired him because they thought they could do better, and they didn't find anything close to even as good as until Ben Johnson. And so,
right.
And so to your point on it, and yeah, look, the Broncos fired Dan Reeves, who was great, and then they brought in Shanahan, and that worked out fantastic. And obviously, what the yep. Cowboys fired Tom Landry, and they brought in Jimmy Johnson, and that worked out great. But there's more often than not getting rid of a guy that you're kind of sick of as a fan base, or you're kind of think I can do better, doesn't work out. My question was more of I looked at more the angle of like LaFleur. If he's like, you know what, if you came with me like a 1 year extension after this year, I'm done. Because I think Matt LaFleur would be the hottest coaching candidate this offseason or any offseason he's available. Is that a crazy thought? I guess that's the other part of it. Of like, at some point, LaFleur does have agency if he just says, you know what, I don't feel like I have a working relationship with Goody. As you hear the team I follow in Chicago, you got Ben Johnson and Poles. Like, those guys are working together. Ben Johnson has heavy influence on the picks. That's part of the reason why he came here. He wanted that. Obviously, Poles is still the GM. And then you got Goody. And the Packers seems more of a separation of church and state. And LaFleur could say, you know what? I want more money. I want more control. And I've done enough to get it. I think any of these teams out there that currently have a job would bring in LaFleur. And I think a team like Baltimore or Pittsburgh, if they fired their head coach, a guy like LaFleur would mitigate some of the bad PR if you fired Tomlin or John Harbaugh and you brought in Matt LaFleur. So I'm also just wondering, like, LaFleur might just say, you know what? I don't want to be here anymore because this has run its course. I can get paid more money and be more appreciative and have more say in what's going on with the roster.
Yeah, or let's try this one. And I still don't understand why he would do this personally, but what if Ed Policy decides to go back to the way it used to be, where the GM was above the coach on the pecking order, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if that's what he decided to do? If I was Matt LaFleur, I'd say, hey, that's not what the terms of my contract said. And so you're going to have to do something with my contract. And maybe they end up, how about this? How about they trade him? Right?
Right.
That's, like Gruden and other coaches have been. Like, maybe that's the end game. Because if I was the Tennessee Titans, boy, I would give up a second-round pick in a heartbeat after how many hires they've screwed up, including firing Mike Vrabel. Who now seems to have done okay for himself in New England.
Right.
So, if you have a young quarterback, he would be the first person I would call right now. Now that Ben Johnson has a job, he would be the first. I mean, I like him better than Zach Taylor, who's been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I like him better than Mike McDaniel.
Yes.
Right? I mean, from that whole tree, you know, O'Connell has had success. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not. He may be a better coach, but he doesn't have a better resume at this point.
Yep.
So I'll be very. It. I think there will be. Here's another possibility of drama, Molly.
We want you back.
We want to extend you, but we don't want Rich Bisaccia, or we don't want Adam Stenovich.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that? Right. Like, it's kind of telling you who you can and can't hire. I would say, and I said this.
But would
this
he disagree,
morning,
though? Would he disagree with getting rid of Rich Versace at this point in time?
Stenovich, for sure. I feel like he'd disagree with.
I think Versace. I really do think that he sees him as much as we can criticize special teams. He is really highly regarded and respected by players and coaches. Culturally, he is really valuable, whether fans want to believe me when I say that or not. But the special teams have not been good, regardless of who's coached them. But, like, I would say this, and I say this as someone who I really like Adam Stenovich. Like, if I didn't have to cover him, I think he and I would be friends, okay? Our girls have played sports together. We talk all the time when I run into him at stuff. But I do wonder if they need an injection of new ideas, right? Steno's been here the whole time. Do they need another offensive person? Like, bringing back Luke Getsy doesn't bring new ideas, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
He was here before. Like, it almost feels like they need someone from a totally different, not necessarily system, but certainly a different, like, realm who has new ideas and different ideas. So whether you were to change staff or add someone like that, you know, having, you know, the guys that he's brought back, Nathaniel Hackett, I mean, giving guys jobs after they lose their jobs after they left you doesn't bring in new ideas. And mm-hmm. I think that would be something that should be at least considered.
Jason, I got to follow up on that because I just read a story in The Athletic, for, I think, with Dan Pompey about Matt Nagy. And it was about like his failure with the Bears, but it was Andy Reid talking about why Matt Nagy was so important to the Chiefs and why he was offered a job immediately when he was let go and why he wanted them around the room. And he said, Matt's the guy that tells me when I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that, to your point, that maybe you need to have someone in there with the strength to say no. And maybe, I don't know any of these guys, so I'm obviously just guessing on it, but like maybe all of them are still, either it's groupthink or they just are going to go along with what the coach says because they're the coach. Either one, not necessarily the most productive thing.
Yeah, and look, I don't know enough about the inner workings of how those guys connect or how they approach idea generation, but look, we all would fall victim to that to some degree, right? Like, I want to keep my job.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that I keep Jesse Nelson happy. but seriously, like, I do think that there's value in having people that have different ideas and different perspectives and harnessing that for the betterment of the entire operation. So, again, I don't know if that's an issue or not. I can't speak to that. But I would say that everything gets stale, right? I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact just because McCarthy was here as long as he was and Andy Reid's been in Kansas City so long and Harbaugh in Baltimore and Tomlin in Pittsburgh, a lot of coaches believe that you have a shelf life. Mike Holmgren, legendary Packers coach, Super Bowl champion, was here 7 seasons. That's it. And mm-hmm. that's how long Matt LaFleur's been here now.
Great stuff. Jason, you're a Hoosiers fan, right? The movie?
The movie, not yes. the, not
I thought
the
you
program.
Meant Indiana. I was like,
no,
what?
The movie.
When?
So I just saw this. It popped up while I was talking to Jason. I was like, Jason likes the movie Hoosiers. So if you start the movie Hoosiers at 10:07 p.m. and 48 seconds on New Year's Eve, you'll ring in 2026 just as Jimmy Chitwood hit the game-winning shot. So if you didn't have plans, now you do.
I don't have plans, but I would predict in my old age I would fall asleep around the time they're winning like their sectional final.
Yeah, I'm not making it past much of the start date, 10:07 start time there.
Are there any chairs being thrown in this movie?
No.
No.
Have you never seen Hoosiers?
No, I don't even know what it is.
What?
Oh my God.
Is it about Indiana?
All right.
It's about high school basketball in Indiana, and I've never you owe me such an apology now over that Big Mac stuff. If you don't know the Hoosiers, this is embarrassing.
That's probably not the most embarrassing reference that I understand.
It's a little bit maybe
fair.
You know, I thought Homer sent the movie Hoosiers to anyone that had kids in Good Karma. He used to do that for a long time. If you had a kid, he'd send you a copy of Hoosiers.
Haven't gotten it.
I didn't get one either for either one of my daughters, but he did that
I've
for
got
some
an
people.
Extra one. I'll send it to you.
Perfect.
There you go. It is a classic. Jason, thank you so much for your time.
All right, everybody, take care. Be good.
That's Jason Wilde. Check out Chalmers Jewelers in Madison and in Middleton. Madison's custom, Madison's family-owned, Madison's locally-owned jeweler. Chalmers Jewelers in Madison and in Middleton. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light.
You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly.
The Barry Alvarez Show, live from Ruth's Chris Steakhouse with Jesse Nelson, Tarek Salah, Derek Engler, Barry Alvarez.
Amen.
Amen, Barry.
So you
Amen,
can tell
Derek.
Rutledge that.
Amen, Molly.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Molly, what is bothering you about
I
this
can't.
Voice? Why are you getting so sweaty?
Presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN, the ESPN Wisconsin app, and ESPN Madison on YouTube.